Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry today. So these are the only apologies we have. We going to give this opportunity to Fedusa. Fedusa and Fedusa. After this Fedusa, it will be Ubuntu Development Forum. And after them, there will be the consult will make a presentation. I'm told Fedusa is not here. So we don't have an apology from Fedusa. Could you give this opportunity to Ubuntu Development Forum to give their presentation? If you could, do it in 10-15 minutes, we'll be much happier.
It will be great, sir.
Oh, thank you very much.
let me thank you very much, and I must just say that all protocol observed. Say, I was just saying to the secretary that we run a huge risk of being redundant because all the things that we had planned to say have been said and have been discussed. And I'm saying this with all honesty. We've got the presentation in front of us, and it captures all those things. Because really what we were hoping to look at is the fact that these mothers of ours, I'm a young man and I've been trained and by a domestic worker and educated by one. They work in isolation. They are unions, but they work behind closed doors. And that is a huge challenge because all the sexual exploitations that happen and emotional abuses that happen behind closed doors. And when they seek recourse through unions, they go back and they face their employers one-on-one. There's no other worker besides them to help them. And it is a huge challenge. One of the challenges that we don't have a proposal to, but we think that we should raise it. The fact that recourse is very little for domestic workers, precisely because of the nature of their work, working in isolation. And another thing is that there is no contractual obligations or agreements between the employer and the employee. This is not regarded by many employers as a regular kind of employment. It's informalized, so there are no clear directions guiding principles that will guide both the employers and the employee to know what is exactly expected of each. In our jobs, all of us here, we have job descriptions. We know what is expected of us. We know our rights. But most of the time, for domestic workers, they may know what is expected of them, but they do not really know what the employers may not do to them. Another thing, I've mentioned the gender-based discrimination, and there's an issue of migrant workers that when we have tried to do some research, we found it to be a problem. First of all, the migrant workers are exploited mainly because they don't have paperwork, some of them. And for those that have paperwork, it's confiscated, as was said by the previous colleagues. But this leads to another problem in that we have discovered that most employers would rather employ foreign workers than South Africans, because foreign workers do not insist on their rights. And now, I know this may be, what's the right word, controversial, but this leads to tensions amongst these workers, that is the South Africans and those that come from our neighboring countries. In that those that come from our neighboring countries, especially Zimbabweans, are seen, when you talk to domestic workers, as people who are compromising their struggle because they do not insist on their rights. And even if Zimbabweans wanted to insist on their rights, they can't, because some of them don't have proper documentation. And we are saying that this is one aspect that must be looked at carefully and by the Department of Labor and the Department of Home Affairs to make sure that this exploitation stops. And we want to assure this committee that we are of the opinion that if that is addressed, it will also address the issues of xenophobia as well. Let me leave that. We have, as I finalize, some kind of proposals. The issue of human trafficking, mainly from the Eastern Cape and from the Karoo. There have been documentaries about this. It's a real problem. And they are brought here and they are exploited, and some of them even sexually. So we are proposing that this must be really looked at by the government and then dealt with. Regularize domestic work. Make sure, if it is possible, that there are contractual agreements that will be guiding both the employer and employee. And we are also asking that, if it were possible, that education of the domestic workers, be it through ABET or skills development, CETAs, whatever it is, let them be educated to know their rights. Let them be educated and skilled in things such as art, to address or to do exactly what was said by, I think, Black Sesh, that we must enable domestic workers, because they are now young, to be mobile in the economy. We have, for instance, an art project that we are starting in the Hangberg community, which is a volatile community in Hout Bay. And that will cater for exactly this kind of people, and it will help them to be mobile in the economy, because there's a lot of tourism that is happening on that side. Lastly, we are really requesting for all the stakeholders around this table to help and strengthen the unionization of domestic workers. Because as of now, we think that it is the only avenue that will enable them to speak out and to ensure a complaint mechanism, which is somehow now lacking. They don't know where to go and complain about the discrimination that they face. But if we enable the unions, then we know and we are aware that it will help to undo a lot of the bad that is happening within this. And I am done, Chair. I was distracted from the prepared presentation because of trying to avoid redundancy. But let me thank you very much for that.
Thank you very much. Ubuntu is our partner on a lot of other things. In fact, they are involved in a campaign to criminalize contraventions of the basic conditions of employment. So thank you very much.
Thanks.
Could we give this opportunity to a representative of COSATU? Thank you.
Okay. Good morning or good afternoon. And thank you to the committee for inviting COSATU to make a presentation. We'd like to actually commend you for actually taking this initiative. Obviously, noting that there is an obligation now that there is a convention in place. I do want to apologize at the outset for not having a written presentation through some miscommunication. We were actually only informed, our office was only informed at the last minute. So I will try to talk to the issues, and hopefully we won't repeat too much of what has been said. But as always, we would emphasize that COSATU comes from a different political and organizational background. So obviously I think there would be different nuances in what we state. Also, I just want to note that while we support the convention and we agree that it's an important starting point, we must understand that this is actually just the minimum foundation on which we should be looking at how we implement and take this thing take this forward. The standards set there are normally set out to ensure there's maximum compliance and buy-in in the form of ratification by member states, so thereby providing the minimum standards to attract ratification. But the reality is that if you want meaningful implementation, is that we need to look at how we define those standards, not to treat those standards as a ceiling as to how we peg and apply as well as enforce standards for domestic workers. Just noting the latest quarterly labor force survey statistics which were released at the end of last week, we note that there are 876,000 domestic workers currently employed in South Africa, and most of them are actually black women, primarily African women. And if you look at the profile, you see the general intersection of race, class and gender, and essentially what this tends to mirror is the apartheid legacy and what we've inherited in terms of what we continue to define different relationship in terms of the different strata is access to education and training opportunities. So in addressing decent work for domestic workers, we've also got to understand our broader developmental challenge in terms of addressing the broader enabling of the sector to participate in the economy as a whole in a more meaningful way. And what I think is probably more important is that if you look at the whole purpose of employment, ultimately it's about leading a person out of employment. You know, there's this misnomer that the so-called idea that having any kind of work gives you dignity, whereas reality is if you're trapped in poverty and you're part of the working poor, there's very little dignity in that. And leading on from that is that poverty employment is normally characterized by intergenerational poverty. So the kind of work that your parents or people that you are dependent on, the kind of opportunities and the kind of level that they participate in the economy will define your life in the future and the level at which you'll participate in the economy. It will define the kind of skills and educational opportunities and quality of education that you would get. And that, I think, is very important for us in terms of how we define decent work for domestic workers. We note that the challenges also that are placed in relation to domestic workers are very different from a worker that you'd find on the factory floor. The employment relationship is very isolated, very individualized. And then the common characteristic that they describe as invisible, because you know, it's basically a person who's in a private home behind often security gates and guards. The difficulty that this places in terms of organizing the sector, apart from the fact that you're talking about a very low-wage, low-income group and was generally vulnerable within a dynamic of unequal power relations, which then inhibits generally joining a union, is that it places practical barriers in terms of accessing an individual worker behind those barriers. And the reality is that if you distinguish accessing workers, you can on the factory floor, you can normally speak to a group of workers at a factory floor and reach a broader collective rather than an individual worker. And the whole notion of unionizing is about collective bargaining, because real power comes from your collective strength. Individual negotiation, especially at this level, especially with in relation to lower-skilled and lower-income workers, actually reduces any kind of benefit that you get in terms of the bargaining relationship. And we think that that's actually very important for us to look at how we support organizing domestic workers in relation to the collective bargaining process. Now, that would obviously start to raise challenges both in relation to government, at all levels, as well as to civil society, and specifically in relation to trade unions. Also, in addition, the low and irregular incomes are also what makes it very, very difficult for us to set up and establish viable and strong unions. And just obviously, you know, SETSAWU, which has historically been associated with COSATU, is a reflection of that, as an associate rather than a full affiliate. And we're moving towards a full affiliation, but that is a reality in terms of the whole question of how the fact that poor incomes actually undermine the setting up of an establishment of viable and strong unions. The other difficulty we face, and that also it relates to just trying to move the sector towards setting better standards, both in terms of wage and employment conditions, is that despite the work being a very broad scope, and it can be, you know, flexible favoring the employer as opposed to the worker, the scope of the work can be anything from housework to charing to garden work to childcare to caring for the aged and ill people, and this can change from day to day, you know, within a single employment relationship. And within that context, despite that work enables others to go and access skills, access often very high-paid, high-skilled work, that work is actually undervalued. And that's a difficulty that we normally face in terms of actually trying to define even a living minimum wage, which we would argue in support of SITSAWU, that the current minimum wage is not adequate in terms of providing a decent living standard for domestic workers and their dependents. What I've just laid out is just the general vulnerability affecting all domestic workers. But in addition, we've all noted that there's an intersection of other factors such as child labor. I do think we need to talk about more in depth in terms of the setting of on how we regulate child labor as well, because we don't think that the standards set either in the Constitution or the Convention are actually adequate. There's an intersection with migrant labor and trafficking, and associated with that is xenophobia, and of course our old demon, the use of labor workers, which we unequivocally call for banning of. We believe that it's correct that the convention is premised on decent work principles. The difficulty that we are faced, generally speaking, is that there isn't a common understanding of what decent work means. And then taking that further in relation to domestic workers and what I've described, I'm sure what other presenters have described, is their particular dynamics as far as domestic workers, which would further inhibit and which will pose additional challenges in how we define decent work specifically for domestic workers. And here I just want to, I'm sure it's going to be raised in the process of the discussions. We know that there are those who just disingenuously argue against the notion of decent work, the principles of decent work, and use it as a basis to artificially create barriers between workers and the unemployed. And as far as we understand and as far as labor statistics reflect, you find that the vast majority of workers, and especially those concentrated in the lower end of the labor market, tend to be those who actually provide an income and provide remittances for the unemployed. In fact, the unemployed are very much part of the lives of the working poor. So anyone who creates the notions about so-called the working elite is actually disregarding the realities of ordinary workers. This may not be the reality facing high-end, high-income workers who live in nuclear families, but this is the reality facing South African families who are the majority of the poor, who reflect the general cultural and socioeconomic dynamics in our country. Moving on to the four pillars or goals of decent work. The first one relates to the creation of decent and productive employment. I've spoken to that very briefly in relation to the minimum wage. And as we'd indicated before, we would support moving towards a living wage, one that actually enables the worker to move out of poverty and to ensure that we address the whole question of intergenerational poverty. Obviously, this would extend beyond that to employment conditions as well, ensuring that that the way in which employment conditions, whether it's working hours, the security of employment, and those kinds of things are also addressed. The second principle relates to access to social protection, and this is a major problem in terms of coverage for domestic workers. As you all know, most workers... there's some coverage, obviously, in relation to US, and I do stress some. As you know, that workers who tend to be concentrated in the lower end of the labor market tend to be more vulnerable to repeated unemployment, which means they invariably use up the unemployment insurance funds, which means that they are less vulnerable in relation to access to social protection. But beyond that, as far as health care, they remain, you know, have to be dependent on the public health system. As far as retirement funds are concerned, you'll find that the vast majority of workers do not have access to retirement funds. And invariably, or if they do, the provision is not adequate to ensure that there's coverage for the rest of their lives beyond once they've retired. And the difficulty that you face is that when questions of affordability are raised in relation to domestic workers or in relation to other sector, the question that we have to ask ourselves is, if invariably a worker at the end of their working life has to depend on state-provided retirement provision, which often based on the fact of their own of their low income would not have contributed to that, in terms of income tax and into the fiscus. The question is then asked, who is subsidizing whom in terms of employment? If you are supposed to be providing employment, and employment is supposed to, is based on the fact that you're employing human beings who go to various stages in life, from birth to death, and in between, obviously, there's illness and retirement. Is the question not being raised that employers are being subsidized in what is essentially their responsibility in terms of ensuring that workers are enabled to contribute to their own retirement at the end of the day? And we really have to ask ourselves these questions about the lack of foresight in terms of the real cost of who bears the hardship in terms of disparities in labor standards. As for the next pillar, which relates to the core labor standards, and this, and I'm not going to go into all the details, but this relates to various aspects, whether it's child labor, freedom of association, the rights to collective bargain, and the rights to join a trade union. Notionally, there's nothing legislation that really prevents domestic workers from enjoying those rights. In terms of legislation, it's there. The reality is, as I've described, it's really difficult for workers themselves to access unions and for unions, your representatives, to access workers. So we need to find more creative strategies in terms of how we actually organize workers and organize them collectively. Individual bargaining, especially at a very vulnerable level, would not actually ensure that this goal would be promoted. On the question of stronger dialogue between social partners, obviously that relates to the whole collective bargaining process, and I won't go into more detail, but essentially if we don't have strong, viable unions, then the question of social dialogue between social partners, especially between representatives, between employers and workers, means nothing in reality. And all we'd be left with is the annual process where we've got to engage between the Department of Labor in its minimum wage setting. I have spoken to at some length in terms of the contextual issues, which I felt that was important for us in terms of defining and how it raises a challenge and making sure that we make some kind of meaningful input into defining decent work for domestic workers. I do want to go, not in full detail, but outline some of the resolutions that COSATU adopted in its central committee in June this year. And I also want to raise that while the CESS amendment platform, on our side, we would have to accept some form of responsibility that as a federation and as union and as affiliates within our union, we ourselves have not done enough to ensure that there's a level of solidarity between unions or sectors that are organized and other sectors that are more vulnerable. So we view this as an important starting point towards taking that forward, and obviously it's not the defining, necessarily the end-all in terms of defining how we take it forward, but we think it's an important starting point. COSATU resolved that in line with financial solidarity, we provide for financial levy that would fund affiliation fees and relevant campaigns. Now, I think first, I'd noted that SAO itself was for a long time an associate of COSATU, not a full affiliate. This is an important principle for us where we're going to try to use levies from other unions to fund SAO as a full affiliate of COSATU. The reality is that under normal circumstances, unions gain and derive their independence from the fact that they are funded and they're viable through their membership fees, which means they're not vulnerable to interference. But when we're faced with realities where you've got sectors that are difficult to organize, then we're going to have to look at measures of solidarity and look at and obviously do it within the labor movement rather than try to overly rely on external institutions. We also resolved a campaign to enforce and increase protection of domestic workers' rights, which include emphasis on compelling enforcement by members, leadership, officials within affiliates in their own homes. And I think this is also very important because this is an acknowledgement of a culpability, I think, across, you know, nationally in terms of country. So it's within unions ourselves as members within our own homes, the invisibility of domestic workers. And I think if we had to take a poll around the room, we probably would find parliamentarians as well would be as guilty. We also resolved to review the strategies targeting individual sectors to ensure the development of new innovative strategies that address specific characteristics that undermine recruitment. This would target vulnerable sectors, not just domestic workers, but, you know, obviously farm workers, for example, which have different dynamics. We also resolved to employ innovative strategies to recruit farm workers and domestic workers, including using resources and human capacity of other affiliates to assist. Here, I think it's important that it's not necessary that you always have to make a financial contribution, but just the fact that you can provide a desk and office space within different organizations. In some cases, it would be unions. If we don't have unions, there would be civil society organizations that may just be able to provide a physical space for organizers to work through. We've also resolved to identify specific recruitment weeks for domestic and farm workers, and further to engage alliance partners on a joint program of action to address the working and living condition of domestic workers. As you can see, a lot of this is also obviously would involve a number of additional practical steps that would have to be defined for us to implement it, but this basically sets the framework. As far as the declaration is concerned, as we indicated earlier, we agree that we should strongly welcome and support the declaration. We believe that it needs to be ratified, but the enforcement and the development of standards needs to be answered on the basis that this is merely the minimum standards, and we need to redefine those things. As far as the regulation specifically in relation to children are concerned, and we know that our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, allows the employment of children. And as far as the Basic Conditions Employment Act, this relates to children between 15 and 18. And as much as the provisions state that there are some restrictions placed that the work needs to be appropriate to the age, we know the reality is that this invariably traps people into poverty and starts to reflect and starts to entrench the current socioeconomic dynamics as far as race, class, and gender is concerned. And as COSATU, we would argue that we need to start looking at ensuring that not just for domestic workers, but that the minimum age for work needs to be raised to 18. Just in relation to the role of government, and I think I can just probably summarize that in just a few lines because I've spoken to that to some extent in the course of the presentation. Obviously, the first step is ratification. The next step would be to look at defining standards. The question in relation to enforcement is probably one of the most difficult ones that we'd have to ask ourselves how we look at enforcement. It surely can't be the same strategies and mechanisms that we use for enforcement on the shop floor. We've got to look at the specific practical dynamics, as well as the issue of looking at how we address mindsets, and the mindsets that are rooted in the idea that domestic work is low-value work and work that is unskilled, and that people should just be grateful that they have a job, when the reality is that this is the work that actually enables other people to participate in the economy at all levels. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, COSATU. Members, I think this is the last presentation, since that the other people could not make it. I'll open this opportunity to members to ask questions to the presenters. But we said earlier that the questions asked in the first round of presentations will hold for this presentation, the last two presentations. Could I give over to... Are there questions from members? New questions? Yeah. Honorable Wisa.
Yeah, thank you. You, or somebody earlier on, I think it's you who alluded to the low level of education for the domestic workers. And the question I wanted to pose before I left was to find out as to whether there are any plans of provisioning working skills to domestic servants. And also we have domestic servants who come from other countries, foreign countries, to come and find jobs here. Are those now qualifying to be paid as expatriates, or the salaries or wages are the same with our local ones? Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Winamo. Yeah, if there could be any response from this.
No, there's no distinction in our legislation between the application of employment conditions between foreigners and nationals. If a Zimbabwean worker is not paid the same as a South African worker doing the same work, the employer has to rectify that. But there's no distinction. There's no different rates of pay for foreigners. Whether that person is in the country legally or not legally. If they found on a farm, for example, or they found in a domestic work, the employer has to abide by the conditions of employment set out in the sectoral determination or in any collective agreement for that matter.
Chair, through you, I just want to find out, you say whether the person is legal or illegal in the country. If I, for instance, employ someone whom I know is illegally in the country, is there no law against that?
Yes. Home Affairs will deal with you. The immigration branch will arrest you, and you will be liable for the repatriation costs of that person.
Verify that, you know.
No, thank you. Thank you very much. I think it's clear that the law enforcement the divisions within the Department of Labor, when they visit a farm, they don't ask whether you are from Zimbabwe. What they do is to check, let's look at the attendance register of workers, you know, are people properly registered? How many workers do they work? There must be payment for overtime work, regardless of where people come from. And the basic conditions of employment applies or should apply to everyone, and contravention thereof, the labor inspectors, the department will deal with you, whoever, and there cannot be an excuse that these are South Africans and these are the Basotos. You find more of domestic workers from Lesotho than, I don't know why they are preferred everywhere, and after some time you find them on the street actually stranded because they've clashed with the employers for one thing or the other, being on the streets, and because they are told stories about their illegality, they're even afraid to go to the Department of Labor. And I think part of what we need is, how do we communicate this information to the affected people? We can only do that if this information is given to all South African citizens, all people who are living within the borders of South Africa need to know their rights, and the employers need to know their rights too, but including their obligation. And the same thing happens even with workers' rights and workers' obligations. I think we have come to the end of our presentation, the seminar. And what is left for us as a committee is we'll have a meeting at a later stage, because you give input on how you see us doing, going forward from here. Then we are going to meet as the committee, our own determination, and then from there write the report, and you will be favored with the report of the committee that will tell you this is what we are going to do based on the seminar today. May I take this opportunity again to thank everybody who participated in this seminar. The free education we got, and including again that this has created a room for us to network and say if we have anything that we'd like to raise, or maybe we need more information about a particular thing, these are the people who will be phoning to get more info that will help us in our way forward. I see you raising your hand.
If I could just be allowed to make two very short points. One is just an observation. And we spoke about the change of attitudes and the change of mindsets here. And I think that we in this room need to start here. We've heard words like, at the beginning, talking about the poor old lady, servants, those people. We need to just conscientiously, when we speak, know that we are speaking about people, women. And then the second thing is that I volunteer in the Domestic Workers Union office, and the one thing that I have noticed in that office is that it's not only a union for the domestic workers, but in the main, it's a union for the employers as well. Continuously, on average, we get several calls from employers saying, I can't get through the Department of Labor. Can you tell us this? How do I register my domestic worker? What is maternity leave conditions? We actually serve not only the workers, but also do the work of the Department of Labor. So we need to also look at that when we have our further discussions. Thank you.
No, thank you. Thanks for those beautiful words. I think most of us here are products of domestic workers. And if by any chance I might have used that word, it was not meant. It was with bad intentions, or not to undermine the same. My grandmother was a domestic worker, and my mom. It only broke with my, those in my age now, my brothers and sisters who are not doing domestic work, because there's an advantage of an education. We respect the domestic workers, and I don't think whoever might said that, they did not, I believe that they did not say it with bad intentions. But we are learning, and there's a program on TV some years ago which went like, what was the program? Mind your language. So we will mind our language. We'll ask everybody to mind their language when they speak. These are very sensitive matters. Thank you. Thank you very much. Lunch is being served outside. And as we break for lunch, minute after this, we'll be at a 10-minute meeting with members of the committee. Yeah, we can remain here and have our little talk here. Yeah. Thank you.
I'm going to go to the next one. What is this?
I'm sure you were wondering why did I not miss it this time.
Oh, no, yeah.